Program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week again. It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday we've had all year.
Yes, we're here.
Yep. Joining me today, Matthew, welcome as always.
Thank you.
And what a start to the year, right? We had, of course, the first trading day of the year was last Friday, which was generally up. And we're already trending like, hey, you know what? Let's just let the party keep going, and we'll just keep pushing the stock market to all-time highs. What do you think?
I mean, so far, that's right? What it's been.
What could
will
possibly
that train
go wrong?
Continue?
Well, that is some of the fun that we're going to talk about today. But this one, all right. So Matt and I had some fun with this. We're prepping a little bit for the show, and we decided today's show. It's really tricky at the beginning of the year because as soon as you say it's the greatest Tuesday I've had all year, you pretty much date the show.
Yes.
You know what?
Are you okay dating this one?
Heck yes.
Because
there is something that is just so remarkable that it's just fun to talk about. And it's like, well, how is this going to affect your money? And the answer is none of us knows. But it's great to talk about.
Yes. What is that? You're hinting at it.
I am. All right. Evidently, there was a military operation inside the borders of Venezuela, and President Maduro is no longer actively in country.
Mm.
Yeah, it's the, what is that, the diplomatic way of saying, we kidnapped the president of Venezuela and his wife, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I think they may have kidnapped the next in line as well.
Well, that wasn't really a kidnap, to my understanding, at least, right?
Well, that was just like, hey, why don't you hop on the luxury liner? Come on over here. Let's brief you for how we're going to reinstall you.
Yes, that's my theory, at least. Yeah. It's like, all right, we're going to take the two parties here that ran for president, and one of them we're just going to take because you didn't, you know, in our opinion, release power. When we thought the election said the other person won. So you're just detained. And then the other one, we need to give you the script and the play-by-play. So why don't you come to the United States? We'll make sure that you're safe, and then we'll return you with the uploaded script.
Okay. Part of the reason this is so fun for me is it's one of these where all I can tell you is, none of us knows.
No,
I don't think we have
shooting even from the hip on that.
Yeah, and I don't think we have the whole story. I think we have the story that people want us to have, or at least the parts of it that we got. And the rest of it's going to be, I'm already hearing about the conspiracy theories. And so we're going to talk today about what might this mean in the investment landscape. Like all of these different things have these weird conspiratorial connections in the investment landscape.
Yeah.
So we got to kind of have some fun with it. And I don't know. I pulled a list of like the top 10 most absurd connections. I want that list. Really?
Yeah.
Here, I mean, I can give you the list or I can read it to you.
No. I want you to give me one and I'm going to tell you whether or not possibly valid or just complete lunacy.
Okay.
How about that?
Let's see. One of them was, the whole event was a psyop to spark a color revolution with fake stories of Maduro surrendering oil and loving Israel.
Wow, that one.
So critics argue that the U.S. media laundered CIA lies about Maduro secretly visiting America to seed oil and minerals and to cut ties with Russia and China and Iran and embrace Israel, all to destabilize Venezuela and then justify the raid.
Well, let's just get straight to the points, right? Like, Venezuela was already destabilized, right?
Thank you for somebody saying the elephant in the room.
Like, the currency had, like, basically collapsed to nothing.
It was basically inflating by the hour.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you knew this, but, like, I heard stories that before this ever happened, and this was, like, a year ago, that people were, they hated the currency so much, and it was devaluing so quickly that the minute that they would get paid, they would go exchange it for, like, Bitcoin.
Sure.
Just because they're like, well, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and the currency is going to be worth half of what it's worth today, so why not just get rid of it immediately? Mm-hmm. And so it's like when people are like, oh, I can't believe you went into Venezuela and got this guy. It's like, well, they are, you know, celebrating on the streets and their currency was there's a long list, right? Like we go through a long list
of
reasons.
That was the thing. So first, let's kind of acknowledge a couple things that are tricky for, I think for most of our listeners, they're, you know, probably down the fairway, but there's going to be some real extremes on this one.
Oh okay? My gosh. Yes.
And I liked the description of this one. Here's the extremes. There are some people that if Trump said oxygen is good to breathe, they'd hold their breath until they die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there are other people that would say oxygen is good to breathe. And so they would go out and get like pure liquid oxygen and try to breathe it. Okay. Neither of these is a good extreme, people, just so you're aware.
Right.
Right. Like you do not want to try to breathe liquid oxygen. That's a good way to die also. So, so somewhere in the middle is probably some truth.
Right.
But, you know, you can get these like really radical positions. And it's just interesting how we've gotten to the point where we're really polarized like that. But now, you know, so now we have that backdrop. It's like, well, what? So some people will just start with the idea that, well, because Trump did it, it's immediately bad.
Sure.
But and you're there are parts of it that probably are. Like what happens when the U.S. like goes into a foreign country and captures their government leadership?
How would we feel as Americans if you came in and just snatched Trump away? Yeah. Like there'd probably be a lot of people that are happy, but a lot of people that'd be really, really mad.
Well, it would be an act of war.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, let's get real about this.
Right.
Now, here's the flip side of it, though. Okay. And I'm not trying to even take a position of right or wrong here. I'm just trying to like lay it all out there for you. The flip side being, there were a whole lot of known human rights issues and violations going on, right? There was a whole bunch of people that were suffering radically in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, we've talked about before, I have a daughter that went on exchange and she was in Brazil last year. And mm-hmm. she met a number of people that were refugees from Venezuela in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
right? They were fleeing to get away and families are being hurt and, you know, people were starving and it like the economy has been trashed. And so there's a bunch of stuff that's like, it's really badly broken.
Yeah.
But then again, it's kind of, well, you know, it's not my monkeys, not my circus, right? Like what are we doing there? It's not really our country to do. And
well,
yeah.
You know what really surprises me in all of this? Is the fact that like a lot of people aren't talking about the fact that this guy was charged back in 2020. So like 6 years ago, he was charged as a narco terrorist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And different than the ISIS type of terrorist. We're talking about like the drug smuggling type of terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was at one point, like I think a $50 million bounty on this guy. And so he was untouchable for a long time. And whatever party you're on or whatever, anytime in history, like I'm thinking back to like bin Laden and all of these other different people, anytime you have a guy out there that's either pushing a lot of drugs or pushing terrorism with weapons or whatever, those people tend to be captured at some point or another. And then most people just celebrate it as like, well, we got someone out of power that was doing bad things. And so I'm like, this guy was doing some bad stuff and a lot of people hated him. I don't know anyone that liked him, so.
Yeah, this is the kind of as close to down the fairway as we can get, is I think a bad person is no longer in charge of a situation that they were making worse.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's kind of the
I think we need to set that precedent pretty early.
We start with that as an understanding of like a whole lot of terrible stuff was going on and it wasn't getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have to wrap sort of the geopolitics into it and go, well, the problem is that Venezuela is a fairly significant producer of oil, and oil is a pretty significant geopolitical chip, right?
Right.
It's on the table and it matters.
Well, and isn't Venezuela like one of the top oil producing countries in the world?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's also a, you know, really interesting history back in the day when, you know, Chevron and Exxon were investing there, and then they nationalized and they took the oil refineries over and kicked Exxon and Chevron out. So like,
I was going to
there's a history
talk about
of like,
yeah.
By the way, they have screwed us too in the past.
I think that's worth noting, because when you get these major U.S. businesses that invest billions of dollars into something, and then you come
nationalize it and say, yank, ours.
Yeah, it's like, well, we're kind of owed a little bit on the back end, you know?
Well, I'm going to be careful with words like we are owed. Right. I'm going to be careful with that.
Well, maybe not we, but like those corporations are.
Well, I'm still going to be careful, just because anytime you get into the language of like owed or this or that, it's like that's kind of a justification thing. What I'm going to say is it's not like there's a tit for tat thing, but it's not like this is out of the blue. This
come
nothing
on,
like
David.
This has ever
eye
happened.
For an eye, tooth for a tooth.
Hey, go Leviticus.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's my wife's rules in the house, right? Like,
yeah, it's like, and now everybody's blind and toothless, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the issue is I can see both. I mean, I can see why you go, hey, there's a sovereignty issue here. We wouldn't allow somebody else to do this to us. And there's also, there's a human rights issue where it's like, we wouldn't allow anybody to do this, period, if we could stop it. And then there's other issues that are just kind of really harder to figure out, but we know that there's a problem.
I think those are the ones that we should kind of focus on, like the more like indirect stuff. Like,
well, I mean, like indirectly here, I'll throw one out.
Yeah.
The United States is the world military hyperpower.
Mm-hmm.
And we also run a big national debt. Other countries don't put money into their militaries much, but what they do is they align with us. And so we partner and they basically rent the military from us for free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when I say free with air quotes, because that rental of our military comes with political alliances where we're supposed to cooperate together. And we agree that you don't have to have a military because you can borrow ours.
Well, we have to do all the heavy lifting anyway. Like, just look over the last 30 or 40 years.
Well, the reason I'm saying this is less about saying, oh, see, we're so cool at our military. I'm saying, no, this was an arrangement. Right, there's a bunch of countries that don't have significant military investment.
Well, even
because
the
they agree to rent from us in a sense, and then people, the flip side of the argument is, people go, "Oh, great, so now we're the world police." You know, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
I just find it weird that, like, because there are other really big militaries, right? Like, Germany's pretty big. Like, France has some stuff. Like, there's a lot of these other
militaries for sure.
But who always gets stuck with the dirty work?
Well, again, I think it goes back to my point I just made, which is the United States gets stuck with the dirty work, but the United States also has global reserve currency status,
mm-hmm.
and the United States is also the biggest bully when it comes to geopolitics, right?
Yeah.
The United States largely gets its way in what it wants, not exclusively, right? Lest somebody come out there and say, oh, you're picking teams or blah, blah, blah. I'm not trying to be a homer on this one. I'm trying to just be real about the politics are muddy. And if you try to pick a side, pick your side. But it means that you have to willfully turn your eye to certain things that the other side probably isn't 100% wrong about.
So, David, I'm going to ask you I'm just going for the question right out of the gate.
Of course he is.
I know. This is what I do. Why did we do it? What's your theory? Why did we go in there? Why did we take him?
Okay.
It doesn't have to be right.
Yeah,
it doesn't
have to
be wrong.
All right. My theory is we take our first break and then we come back and talk about the theory. I'm looking. We're long. So we'll grab it. When we come back, we'll have theories. And I'm going to ask you the same question. You better be ready.
I'm ready.
Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And I'm Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Yeah, remember, guys, you can get caught up on the podcast. We are talking Crazy Theory Day on the, really, I guess, it's the first show of the year, 2026.
Yep.
And the U.S. goes out there and yoinks Maduro out of Venezuela and says, we're just going to take over. And the question is, it's a news story. Now we kind of moved on in some respects. But, like, wait a second. Why would we do that? And you kind of asked me, Matt.
Like, yeah,
what's
I'm like,
my
Dave,
theory?
Why did we do it?
Okay. This is the working theory given what information I have. and I reserved a right to be completely wrong, or somebody could fact check me and be like, you don't know crap. And I'll be like, that's kind of true, right? This is the best I got for now until I get more information. My theory goes to the cost of oil and the impact with Russia and Ukraine.
Okay.
And a little bit with China. This is where it gets kind of interesting. This is kind of the geopolitical web. And now's where it's going to get weird. I'm going to try to connect it all to artificial intelligence. So,
all right.
Here's the theory. Wall Street says, hey, we've been pumping a ton of money into AI. We need to get this stuff online. And we're basically in an arms race with our number one competitor, China, trying to figure out how to do this. Right? Shots were initially fired a year or so ago when China shows up with DeepSeek, which is this large language model that runs on less processor power and seems to have every bit of as much efficacy as a lot of the ChatGPT style LLMs. Okay.
All right.
So if you don't know what I just said, doesn't matter. Just say China is competitive with the United States in AI tech right now. And so what the United States seems to have through NVIDIA is an advantage in terms of the most advanced processors to run AI, and NVIDIA is manufacturing these. Now, stay with me, because here's where all this stuff starts to get connected kind of funny. China can produce power cheaper than the United States right now, because China has been more actively promoting nuclear power in addition to hydroelectric, as well as a bunch of coal and other things. And so they're still using fossil fuels. And China, because they are, you know, willing to be less strict with their environmental policy,
okay,
is, you know, producing kilowatt hours of electricity cheaper. And what do you need to run AI? Lots of energy. Okay?
Okay.
So the United States does not have the capacity and needs to modernize the grid in order to stay clean with an environmental policy. But in order to be competitive with China to be able to power all these processors, because that's the issue right now. It's not that we can't build them. The issue is that we can't build the data centers fast enough. And data centers need what? They need power. They need generators for backup. They need water for cooling. So there's all this infrastructure stuff in order to bring on new AI infrastructure. So the arms race is not for what we already have. It's for what we want.
Hmm.
But we're going to need low-cost energy, and that the pace of putting alternative energy like nuclear in place, it's like a really long runway. Now, why do I think some of this is relevant? Bill Gates. Oh, my gosh. How did you bring this in? You really are a conspiracy foil hat guy.
Oh, I like how you're bringing this full circle.
Stay with me. Foil hat. Bill Gates turns around and says, well, maybe the issue isn't climate change that's the number one issue. Right. And he starts to say, let's get off of the climate change. Everything needs to be renewable energy. And we need to start talking about, you know, sustainability and, you know, like basically changing the language around climate change. You go, well, why would you do that? Well, because you're going to need to bring nuclear in. So you got to soft speak this so that you can warm people up politically to alternative energy sources in order to power AI. So you start at the top with the voices that have been championing the things that are in the way of new energy. Okay, so you there you go with energy. Now, why Venezuela? Well, first of all, going into Venezuela, you can stop them from giving as much oil to China and Russia, which impacts their ability, Russia for the war, China for the AI arms race. And you can drive the cost down for the United States so that they can have cheaper energy while we are transitioning to new sources to keep us competitive in the arms race. Okay. Now, where's the squeeze point and why is it dangerous? Because one of the number one components that goes into the manufacture of these new AI chips is silver. Not that you need a lot of silver, but you need some silver. It's an important industrial use, and you need it to be refined. Who is the choke point for silver refinement? China.
So do you think that in a way then, if we've got oil and silver on the table, if Trump can somehow come in and slightly control the oil flow in and out of Venezuela, he can basically leverage the silver on the back end. Is that what you're saying? Where it's like, oh, we'll let you keep getting Venezuelan oil if we continue to be able to get your silver?
I think it is a bargaining chip to keep the flow going, because if China can restrict silver, then what do you need? Leverage on China. Now, apparently there are some trade deals in play where China could consider this an act of war, though, and they could stop silver flow altogether.
Right, but would they do that, or would that
be
suicide?
That's the point, right?
Yeah.
Is that
it's a game of checkers,
the Trump administration
not chess,
was saying,
yeah,
we're going to need some leverage here, so we need to like impact their energy supply in the short term to buy us time and to give us a chess piece on the board. Mm. So that's my crazy foil hat theory, is that a lot of this is connected to the AI arms race and the U.S. being able to supply enough power to the infrastructure. And we needed to buy time and runway to stay competitive with China while we were trying to get our AI arms race to the finish line.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it's the finish line, right? But we need to stay ahead. So am I crazy? Yeah, we'll see. Could be. But maybe not.
Yeah.
And the issue is there's several danger zones in here, right? If you have any kind of shock to the oil markets, that can have an adverse effect that ripples through the market. Because again, the biggest positions in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are all AI leveraged companies.
Well, what was interesting to me was right when it happened, the first thing that came to my mind was, what does OPEC do now, right? Because if OPEC is largely controlling the supply side of things, does this kind of take it out of their hands where OPEC is like, well, like, we thought we had control of the horse, and...
Well, I think it depends, right? Because now if the United States is de facto controlling Venezuelan oil now, mm-hmm, then what that does is it makes us an unofficial sort of member of OPEC. So now there's a bargaining chip too.
Yeah.
So again, it's all about... Now, the reality is that the United States has a lot of capacity for oil. We've at times been a net exporter of oil as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we're not in OPEC, I still think the controlling parts of the global supply chain are relevant. And so but I think that's the political tie back to all of this, is that by controlling oil in Venezuela, mm-hmm, right? And you look back on it and go, well, what about the drugs and the this and the that? So, well, there's a bunch of other theories, and I don't know all of it, right? But it does make intuitive sense to me that the United States starts to put through the news cycle, look at all these drug problems in Venezuela. Plus, look, their people are suffering and everything's terrible. And so we got to do something, right? So you start with the news stories, you get political will behind it, and then you go in and you execute a plan like this. But what's the net result? You get control of a major supply of oil so that you can influence geopolitically. And we don't fire a lot of shots. That's mm-hmm. the crazy thing about it, is that if you're just a home teamer for the U.S.
Yeah.
and you're like, well, the U.S. just, put another chess player on the board that was to their benefit.
A lot of it is that,
yeah,
right? Like, I mean, think about some of the rhetoric that we've seen from Trump when it comes to like Greenland, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, I want to be able to kind of have some control here. And now that didn't really kind of pan out necessarily.
No, that was a direct no thank you. Right?
Yeah, right.
And maybe not even a thank you behind it, just like no pound sand.
Right. But like as an example, he wanted to have some leverage and power there, and now he's got leverage and power in Venezuela. I think part of what he's trying to do here is more than just the oil, right? It's like, well, I want to be able to have key players in different areas that can back us up, because part of it's trade partners, some of it's just strategic military placement. As AI advances, as technology advances, you want to be able to be more secure. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Like you have more area open to you to be able to get to resources, whether it's rare earth minerals or oil or whatever it is. You want to be able to have your hand in a lot of different places so that if you need to pull a lever, you can pull a lever.
Sure. Well, so let me show my age for a second and bring up a point. I don't know if you remember or not a comedian who's since died, but his name was George Carlin.
Okay.
George Carlin was kind of a gristly guy, and his big thing was that basically all politics was sort of all corrupt. And, he would come across as kind of a almost a neoliberal type in his political thinking. He was a fairly devout atheist, that kind of stuff. But what he said, and this is it's really interesting because a lot of what he used to complain about, and this was probably 15 years ago, sounds like exactly what today is. And his point was, look, you do not have to have a conspiracy to have a bunch of parties that end up with aligned interests and a small group of people in a controlling position.
Yep.
And so I don't know that what you've just said is mutually exclusive to what I just said. There could be both military advantages. There could be economic advantages. There can be AI-related issues. These could all align. And it wasn't because of conspiracy. It was because the nature of these events simply align.
Yep.
And so all of these could still be true simultaneously, or many of them, maybe not all. Mm-hmm. And so that's the interesting part about us. It's like, just because I pose a theory, it's like, oh, that might actually be right. It might be the theory is wrong, but some other part of it still mirrors the same outcome. And so it still happens, because there's just so many things that align with. At the end of the day, it wasn't in the U.S.'s interest to have a rogue actor supplying people that are not allies to the United States with oil and disrupting the geopolitical efforts for whatever the reason.
Yeah, I mean,
so
if you've got a bully on the playground, right, and you're the
everybody wants the bully gone kind of thing.
Well, yeah, and you're the biggest, baddest dog on the playground, and you just have to huff and puff and blow the house down. Like,
okay, so here's the question, and we're going to go to break, and you're going to come back and answer this question. Matt, what if we're the bully?
Ooh.
All right, stick around.
Flipping the script.
We're going to come back, and then that's the question, Matt.
All right.
What if we're the bully?
Okay, we can play that game.
Good stuff. All right, everybody stick around. It's a new year and all kinds of conspiracy, and we're having fun. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where, boy, are we throwing rocks today.
Why
Matt,
not?
Are we, when I say we, is the United States the bully in the room right now?
No, we're the hero. We're the Captain America with a cape. You know, World War II happens. We come in and save the day.
Captain America didn't have a cape.
Well...
It's a shield, man.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that, I mean, sometimes we kind of like push our way because we can. But I think most of the time our intentions are like relatively reasonable. I'm not going to say they're always good, but like we go in and bail people out.
Like, carry on, man. Carry
on. Like, we just
it's funny. He chose this role. I'm like, I said, man, are you sure you want to take this side of the argument? He's like, oh, I got this. And I'm like,
okay, give me an example where we're the bully, and then maybe I'll you an example where we're the
good guy.
First
of all, I'm going to say, just because you're the bully doesn't mean you're not doing what seems to be the ethical and morally right thing, but you're still the bully. Like, the bully is the person that comes in and says, my way is right and your way is wrong, and I'm forcing my way on you.
Okay.
That's really what we're
doing.
So
that's the frame
up. And
right.
So you could say, well, we're the hero. And like in Venezuela, there's probably a whole bunch of people that will ultimately get freed up from this. And then they'll feel like we are the hero. But there's not everybody. There were some people that were protected by the regime or will find themselves without the same system of support, and they won't know what to do. And so they're going to suffer for a little while things get like sorted out. And, you know, they may and they have the same opinion. Again, somebody came into our borders and took our leadership and, you know, did it by force.
Yeah. I could argue the flip side of the coin where it's like, was it actual leadership or was it just like a tyrant?
So, again,
you know what I mean?
Well, I do, but so this is the thing. This is where nuance comes into it.
Right.
And what we're really doing is, by the way, this is so relevant for investors because I see this a lot. Heck, we've probably all done this. Rationalization and justification, right? Well, let me just kind of explain why what I did was okay.
Yeah.
You know, well, I kind of disregarded that rule, but I had my reasons, and it's because, and you go, well, you know, here's where the slippery slope begins.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty hard. Like, I'm more inclined to say, rather than like, no, we're not the bully, we're this idea, to just go like, we're the bully.
Hmm.
And I'm not really apologizing for it, right? If I'm the bully that steps in to keep somebody else from being bullied,
maybe the fact
that I'm a bully is still... I might be a bully and a hero in that moment.
True. The bully can be the peacekeeper.
Well, yeah. To the person that was trying to steal from somebody else that got stopped, they don't like you. They think you're a bully that sucks, right? But to the person you saved, they love you.
Hmm.
So I think that the problem is that there are rarely black and white, good and bad decisions when you're dealing with tons of people.
Oh.
Right? Like, yeah. I have a million people. I'm not going to make a million people happy.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my proof, right? If we created homes for every homeless person out there and every person in this country, there'd still be some people that are homeless because they'll choose it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, not everybody wants to choose homelessness. That's not my argument. My point is that you won't get 100% participation. Some people will give a middle finger to the system just because they're like, I just don't follow authority. I will do the thing even if it hurts me just to not do it. And so you won't get a perfected solution where everybody's okay with it. Again, there is that joke, right? Some people, if you tell them you have to breathe, they'll hold their breath and try to die. Just because they cannot submit to any version of authority in their mind, even if it's in their best interest for reasons that, you know, aren't tyrannical.
Yeah.
That just, there's going to be some of them, which is why I'm okay just saying, we're the bully. We just are. I mean, on the flip side, people come and say, will you help? And I think the United States as a country does a lot of help. Like, we are the first to render humanitarian aid. We are the first to provide resources. Like, we are, that's what we do.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we do it as well as we've always done it, but I like to think that we're still trying.
Mm.
So it doesn't make us perfect, but you know, I think you can hold a position for both. I think we can be the bully and still be the good guy sometimes.
My not that I actually subscribe to this conspiracy theory, but I think my theory actually kind of plays off of us actually being the bully in this instance. Where
I do want to know, you have a theory about what's happening here and why we did it.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever seen one of the South Park episodes where it's just like they just yell at each other back and forth over and over and over again until someone gets really mad and like hits the other one? What if this was just like that, right? Like, we can trace it back, 2017, 18, back in that time frame. That's when this whole thing kind of started between Trump and him. Like, they were mad at each other, and words were exchanged. Trump slapped Venezuela with sanctions, especially on their oil. He froze assets. Maduro responded. He called Trump an imperialist. He lipped off, got mouthy. And then he accused Trump of economic warfare. He framed him in a certain way. It got personal, right? And this goes on.
You know, there's a theory inside of this, too. I'm going to see if you say it, but go on.
Okay. So basically, it got personal. It kept going on. A year goes on. Now we're into 2019. And Trump basically says, you're not even the legitimate president, right? Mm-hmm. He names someone else the president. And he encouraged the military to just abandon the guy. And then Maduro hits back with like, oh, you're orchestrating a coup. And then he cuts all diplomatic relationship. And this escalates year over year. 2020 hits. Obviously, Trump isn't reelected. But Trump gets back into office. And we know how Trump is. He remembers stuff. Like, it's not like he just, like, forgot about it.
It's one of the reasons that when people say Trump's a narcissist, I go, well, it is kind of an interesting tell. Like, when you hold a grudge permanently.
Like, I just wonder, like, did Trump lay awake a few nights? Like, if I get back in office, watch what I do to you. And just, like,
I don't know. But, I mean, first of all, you have to sleep. I mean, the guy only sleep, like, 4 hours a week or something.
Dude, he had a lot of time to think.
When you lay awake, it's like, you mean, like, when you never sleep, you just dwell on it?
Right. So, like, it's not – in my – one of my theories is Trump was just laying there a couple sleepless nights and was like, you know what, that Maduro guy, I'm going to really whack him when I get back in office. I've got a big military and I do what I want. So I'm going to punch him in the face.
It's funny because that whole do what I want thing is part of what ruffles feathers, because, you know, when you disregard other parts of the government's protocol in this, you know, it's like, well, Congress wasn't consulted. Well, it's like, I just went and did it.
And you know, the military generals loved it. They're just itching for action, right? Where it's like, oh, we can go into this like 2-hour conflict where no one, you know, probably gets killed, and we pull off this crazy mission and we look like heroes. We had no casualties.
Remember,
like, yeah, a helicopter got hit,
it's
like
the victors write the history books.
Yeah. Someone
so like, we're the heroes. It was amazing. Somebody else somewhere is being like, those guys suck.
Right? We got a bunch of medals thrown around. Trump gets to get in front of the media and declare a W.
It's
like, when you're 70, how old is he?
77, 78.
77.
Now.
You're looking for a W. Like, what if it's that simple?
I love your conspiracy theory is down to like, so it's kind of like this. We're on a playground, and I didn't like what you said. You said it anyway. And then I was like, fine, I'm going to meet you at the bike rack after school. And then you weren't there, so I went to your house.
That's literally what I'm saying. Yes.
I'm like, okay.
There's, you can always count on me for a good one, can't you?
I'm like, perfect.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm here for.
Okay.
How do you even rebound from that? Like, how do you even...
You want to know how?
Yes.
Hey, we got to take a break.
I forced you into an
early
one.
We're
going to
take a break. When we come back, we're going to regroup. Everybody stick around. It is Crazy Conspiracy Tuesday, and we are not done. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
That's what you want. That's who you vote for.
Okay. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show, gang. We are having fun today. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And, of course, we have actually off camera and off mic today, but at some point this may change. Emma's with us today in studio. So it's, you know, we're having fun with this.
She's waving through a microphone.
She is,
somewhere.
And you should see the reactions. I don't think she was prepared for what was going to happen today.
Nope.
So, okay. Well, everybody's getting a little bit more insight. So when we last left our heroes at the break, we were we just
do we really want to go back there?
Well, there's been a couple conspiracy theories out here about like why did the U.S. go in and get Maduro and yoink him out of Venezuela? Mm-hmm. I also like to say yoink. I think that's funny. And my theory was this long-winded extrapolation of like, well, it's about oil and putting chess pieces on the board so that you can have leverage geopolitically. And Matt says he might have just had a personal grudge and wanted to go get him.
Yeah.
And then what you guys missed at the break is our discussion about how Trump may actually be capable of playing a mafia character. and here's what we mean. Not the organized. Well, some people are like, yeah, he is a crime boss. That's not what I mean. It's the idea of the personal relationships are sort of, it's like when it's after hours, actually kind of, you know what reminds me of a little bit? The old Wile E. Coyote and Sam the Sheepdog, right? Where they fight each other all day and then the whistle blows and then they shake hands and leave and they're like, everything's cool now. Mm-hmm. And then the next day they go back at it again and it's like, that's just business. Yeah. You know, it's like, hey, we could be friends, but, you know, if it's business, sorry, I got to take you out.
I think a lot of it is he's just having fun. If you watch the press conferences of all the guys that are like there, like he'll say something and then there'll be like a bunch of people smiling like, oh, I'm trying not to laugh. This is great theater, you know?
I have to say, it'd be a little bit like if they put us in charge. That there's some of the way that we interact with each other, mm-hmm. just sort of, I'm sorry, I can't be that serious. I'm going to have to make a joke about this.
Right.
And people, there's a bunch of people out there that go, oh, I can't take a joke.
Did you see?
You are a piece of work. How could you ever say that? And I'm like, well, that was kind of funny. What do you mean?
Did you see the video where someone made a thing and I think Trump like reposted it where he's flying the fighter jet? And did you see it?
I don't know.
Oh, you're like, I'm going to deny that. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch it.
Well, I mean, I don't troll social media much anymore. It's just kind of...
It's almost just entertaining at this point.
Yeah, I think it's more that it's...
politics hasn't been entertaining in a while.
It's been polarizing and mean and still seems to be a lot. I get why, but I find it easier to kind of read than to watch video of this stuff most of the time. And yeah, the memes are pretty funny. But you know, the algorithms are designed to pump you full of confirmation bias.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you'll read this stuff? Great. Let's send you more of it until you so that you won't go away. And, you know, maybe along the way we can get more information about you, and then we can feed it to advertisers, and we can, you know, fleece them for money while we're convincing everybody that you're going to buy stuff from them, when really you're just going to, you know, shout at whatever's on your screen. And I go, like, I miss when I could see my friends and kittens.
Really? Okay.
Maybe not kittens, but I never see friends posts anymore. I just see, like, random crap. So I stopped dealing with it. Plus,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever successfully changed someone's mind on social media, but I'm pretty confident I have not.
No, people don't really change their minds. So you just, like,
that's why the election cycle seems so funny to me. Is, although I have heard, like, people that say, well, I voted for somebody else, and then at a different time I voted for somebody else.
Right. It's amazing how much.
There really are people in the middle that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny because I find myself saying for a while now, well, you know, ideologically speaking, I'm yet to find that many candidates aligned with anything I believe in. So.
I think it's less about, like, how many people are really in the middle, and more about just motivating people to actually take action and vote. That's the biggest one, right?
Sure,
like,
sure.
There's a reason why Elon Musk spent as much money as he did to rent all those buses and send those buses out to get people on the buses and then take them to the voter stations. Because he knew, if I don't do it, they're not going to actually cast a ballot. So I have to incentivize you to get up and move. Yeah. Go do something. And so I think that's really, like...
It's shocking how few people actually wag the dog. I remember a vote. I'm not going to give specifics, but I'm going to tell you there was a county and a fairly significant financially impacting vote. And I looked at the overall voter participation in that county's election cycle, and it was something like 17%, 16%. And then out of that, you know, it the measure carried by like 53-47, which people are like, oh, yeah, that's a comfortable win. I'm like, on 17% participation, that means, you know, roughly 8% of the population capable of voting decided the outcome.
Right.
And I'm like, so you mean to tell me that less than 10% of the population ultimately makes the decision, and everybody else just goes along for the ride?
Mm-hmm.
And it was really sad and frustrating. It's also why I think the low information voter is the most easily deceived.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, I just pick one issue that I care about, and then all your politician has to do is make sure that they can appeal to you on that one issue, and you don't care about the rest of their policy. It could be train wreck, and you're like, well, but they vote the way I want on the one thing I know about, so that's it.
Hmm.
And that's modern-day political science.
Yeah.
It's like, well, hardly anybody's going to vote, so the handful of undecided people just find the issue that's their hot button and push that.
Hmm.
There you go. That's not a conspiracy, by the way. That's just how people vote in this country.
So one of the conspiracies on that list that you had was that there was some, like, trader that kind of sold out Maduro, and that's how we were able to actually get him, know where he was, go execute this thing, and get him out of the country.
Yeah, or an agent, or, you know, some other clandestine information source that would have given.
That one actually seems kind of probable, right?
Because, well, I think that is probable. I think that we probably had inside information, because you don't have an operation that's like that casualty free and that smooth without really good intel.
Yeah. And when you're that, like, aggressive towards your own people, I bet there's a lot of people who, for a little tiny amount of money, are willing to risk it.
Yeah.
To, like,
or maybe not even money. It's like, right. Tell you what, we'll just let you move to the United States and have asylum. And we, we'll hook you up into the great condo in Miami.
Yeah.
You're like, all right. Like, here's where he is. I'll give you the keys.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, no, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah, you know, if it's about money, I apparently we can just print it. So,
yeah.
I mean, more effectively, Venezuela can apparently just print it, too. It just won't spend.
Yeah.
So, oh, man. Yeah, I mean, what would you do if you had the right information? I mean, it changes a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So we could say that about investments, too. I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, at some point we have to pivot to, like, how does this relate to, you know, our investors, and why are you listening to this show today? It's like, well, I don't know.
Well, first
of all, different than the normal financial advice. Like,
because
we just
fun. And then at the end of the show, you get that little tidbit of gold that you can just go take to the bank. David, do you have that tidbit ready for our listeners?
What a setup. Oh, my gosh. It's funny, the comment that just happened was that, you know, it's amazing what you can do with the right information.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the funny thing about that is in all of this show, that would be the thread, right? If you looked at this and said, okay, mm-hmm. well, it's amazing how much more effective things become if I have the right information. The problem, of course, is, and this is actually kind of a tie-in and a theory that I've had for a long time, that we no longer have an information advantage in terms of access to information. What you need to do is be able to filter it well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the challenge is, like, everybody now can get tons and tons of information. What do you do with it? And it's those that can filter it well and that can use it well that end up being successful. And the reason that the game is getting harder to play and it happens faster and faster is because of the speed that information moves.
Yeah.
And I can track the way market cycles have sped up as bandwidth has been expanded in the internet. Mm-hmm. And the faster it goes, the faster the markets go. And as the markets move towards 24-hour trading, computerized, you know, nonstop trading, I only expect it to accelerate.
And the Fed seems to intervene like way quicker on stuff too. Yeah. Like,
no, policy action is more aggressive and more rapid. Yep. And I think that's because they can get access to the data faster too.
Sure.
So yeah. I do see that, you know, maybe in the future we have shorter bear markets. We have more aggressive drawdowns when they happen. And so again, how do you recognize those? How do you navigate those? It's getting more complicated.
Well, part of what you can do is you can pay people to manage the assets for you because they're always, you know, watching this stuff on a daily basis.
So yeah, you can find people. Do we know any people that might be part of the
job? I don't, but you might.
All right, guys. It's a shameless plug as we're at the end of the show. Matt, how can they reach us?
Yep. Call us at 541-375-0898. Or if you want to be kind of lazy, just go to the website at littlejohnfs.com and just go use your fingers and type out a message that says, help me.
If you wait about 5 or 10 seconds, a chat bot will pop up and it'll pester you and say, like, hey, can I help you with something? So you can grab us there.
But a real person can actually get back to you.
Yeah, that chat bot does go to a real person. So you really will get them. So. All right, well, I'm looking at the clock. I guess we better punch out. So, hey, Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.